From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM next hour. Ann Elbers joins us, the angelic realm. By the way, happy Victoria Day to our Canadian friends, and happy birthday to Tim from L.A., Mr. Ambassador. Well, here's some of the stories of the day. British scientists will be allowed to research diseases such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's using, get this now, human animal embryos. All this after the House of Commons rejected a ban. An amendment to the Human Fertilization and Embryology Bill that would have outlawed the creation of mixed embryos for medical research was defeated in a free vote by a majority of 160. Now, what this all means is the main type of what they called admixed embryos will be permitted by the bill are hybrids, or they call them now cybrids, made by moving a human nucleus into an empty animal egg. These are genetically 99.9% human, they say, as well as true hybrids. It also allows chimeras that combine human and animal cells and transgenic human embryos that include a little animal DNA. On the line with us now, Deborah Pratt. She's an author, director, visionary, and was a head writer and co-executive producer of the internationally acclaimed television series Quantum Leap. She has also done extensive research into the area of cross-species genetics. Deborah, how are you?
Terrific. How are you tonight?
Good, good. So it looks like, at least in Britain, they're going to go ahead with these human-animal embryos. What's the moral implications here, Deborah?
Well, the moral implications are based on what we as humans feel will be the outcome. I mean, the opportunity to do some of these treatments, it's my understanding that they're going to take stem cell models of the disease, and they want to grow them to study the progress. And in doing that, they'll be able to test a variety of treatments that they couldn't really do on lab rats or animals. So it's a unique opportunity to really explore how we as humans grow genetically with these diseases that are inherent to us, like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's.
Why do we need parts of animal embryos to do this in genetics?
Human eggs are very hard to harvest, in the sense that a woman has got to give up her eggs, but to do that, there's a whole process that has to occur where she's given a certain amount of chemicals to increase them so that they are able to be harvested. And it's a dangerous process that people, I don't think, realize how involved in. I mean, I'm certainly not a medical doctor, but I know that it's a dangerous process.
What's the downside here, Deborah? The downside that something could go very, very wrong?
Very wrong in the sense that this is just my opinion, but once we start going down this path, who's to say how far we go with it? In the sense that they're not looking to implant these embryos into an animal womb or a human womb, but the idea, and it's been talked about for decades, the idea of growing organs that can be implanted into people, kidneys, lungs, hearts. So what are you growing? And I think that's where the moral dilemma really comes in. Are you growing a piece of a human being versus not a human being?
Exactly. All right, Deborah, thank you so much. Deborah's website, thevisionquest.com. Her latest work is called The Vision Quest, Book Number 1. Appreciate you being on the program, Deborah. Tens of thousands of panicked residents rushed into the streets of Chengdu in southwest China, alarmed by a television report that predicted another strong earthquake would hit the region. The pandemonium triggered by the television report showed how people's nerves have been stretched to the breaking point by the May 12th earthquake and aftershocks, which have killed now more than 34,000 people, injured 245,000. Numbers will both go up. And in the days prior to the gigantic earthquake that devastated that province in China, odd swarms of frogs were seen in the streets of cities in the area, and they've subsequently been identified as unusual animal behavior of the type that is thought by some geologists to precede earthquakes. That's the frightening part, though, is now it has developed that similar frog appearances have been taking place in Bakersfield, California, for about 2 weeks, and nobody is quite sure why. Strange swarms of frogs also appeared before the 6.9 Loma Prieta earthquake in October of 1989. Whitley Strieber brought this story to my attention. Jim Berkland, geologist, on the line with us now. Jim, this is unusual that these frogs were seen in the streets in China, and now they're seeing them in Bakersfield, California.
I think we just have to learn from the past what nature has to tell us. Any kind of really unusual animal behavior can be a clue. And if you put it together with other facts, such as the time of the maximum tides that we've had so far this year, we had them with the last new moon. And my last seismic window was the 4th through the 11th of May. And the Chinese quake was about 10:40 p.m. our time, which was still the 11th. That's always called, everybody says it's the 12th. And it was Greenwich time, but it was still the 11th in my period of a seismic window of time of vulnerability. Now, I didn't know what was happening in China, but if I'd known about what the pandas were doing,
mm-hmm.
and the...
And these frogs.
Yes, and the snakes were also doing weird things. We get rats and mice running around in broad daylight. This is a very, very common phenomenon prior to quakes.
Okay, Jim, so that's China. But now here we are, Bakersfield, California. For about 2 weeks, people have been seeing the same thing. What does that tell you?
Well, I happen to have a little... I'm saying that by the 21st, there's going to be a 4-magnitude quake in Southern California because the missing pets in the LA Times went like this from the 7th on and went 3, 4, 6, 5, 9, 10, 11... 10, 6, 7, 5, 6, 4. So it was a nice normal curve, rose to a peak on the 12th, and usually within a week of a peak, you get a quake. And so I'm expecting at least a 4-magnitude quake to hit within 140 miles of Los Angeles by the 21st. That's only 2 more days, but the frogs add to the pattern. Now, if people start telling me about coyotes running down the middle of Los Angeles and seagulls flying way inland and whales beaching themselves and homing pigeons getting lost, that sort of thing.
A 4, I think we can handle, Jim Berkland. I don't think we can handle a 6, 7,
well,
or an 8.
Right. I put a 4+, you know, because in order to get this kind of animal, the last time we had the 11 missing pets was back in February, just before the 6-magnitude quake down in Mexicali. And also with 2 other quakes, about 5.4.
Okay, let's watch this. Let's watch this very closely. Final question. Do we know, and subsequently now in China, how many days before the earthquake did they see all these frogs?
It seems to me it's in the last week, but I don't know exactly. I'm going to have to check on that. But usually the animal reaction, the maximum number of missing pets before the Loma Prieta quake was 3 weeks before. It was all-time record. Instead of seeing 5 missing cats,
yeah,
there were 27. And that was 3 weeks in advance. And the numbers dropped, and then they abruptly rose again on the 12th, 13th of October, and that's when I called the paper to predict the big quake because I had about 5 other critical factors. That
all right, we're going to monitor and watch this, Jim. Jim, website so people can just read up on some of the things you do?
Yes, it's right there. It's Syzygy, S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y, Job, J-O-B, my initials, Syzygy Job, and .com.
All right, very good. That's Jim Berkland, our dear friend. And go to his website. There's a great story about him, too, the man who predicts earthquakes out there by Cal Uri. And just a marvelous man who always just gives us his time and attention. Frogs jumping all over the place in Bakersfield, California, much like happened in China right before their major earthquake. So there you have it. Google is now offering the general public electronic access to their medical records and other health-related information. Some people aren't too happy about that. The Mountain View, California-based web search leader has announced the public launch of Google Health. It lets you import records from a variety of care providers and pharmacies. Google tested the service by storing medical records for a few thousand patient volunteers at a not-for-profit Cleveland clinic. So we'll see what happens there. Very sad story out of Canada. A 16-year-old Canadian girl has died after a virus that simply started out as the stomach flu invaded her heart. The teen battled a rare disease for 3 weeks, which is caused by a viral infection that reaches the heart and inflames the heart muscle. More than two-thirds of young drivers and passengers killed in nighttime car crashes are not wearing seatbelts. Deadly proof of what can happen when young people don't heed parents' pleas and authorities' threats to simply click it. Though seatbelt use actually is rising slightly nationwide, fatality figures published offered a somber contrast as law enforcement launched its annual pre-Memorial Day drive to persuade Americans to simply buckle up. Leading Democratic presidential candidate Senator Barack Obama has pushed back the idea that Iran or any of a few other tiny nations around the world offer a serious potential threat to the United States or the free world, basically saying Iran, Cuba, and Venezuela, these countries are tiny compared to what was the Soviet Union. They don't pose any serious threat to us. In a moment, Dr. Jerome Corsi, we talk with him about that. NASA hopes its latest robot to Mars hits pay dirt when it lands Sunday near the red planet's North Pole to conduct a 90-day digging mission. The three-legged Phoenix Mars lander, fitted with a backhoe arm, is zeroing in on the unexplored Arctic region, where a reservoir of ice is believed to lie beneath the Martian surface. And experts found a tiny gold combined toothpick and earwax spoon, believed to be more than 385 years old, during the search for a shipwrecked Spanish galleon off the Florida Keys. They think it'll fetch $100,000. And by the way, Richard Hoagland writes to tell me that the sci-fi special on the Crystal Skulls, of which highlighted Richard from the enterprisemission.com, did an amazing rating success. He believes, according to some of the producers, the highest rated program in sci-fi history for a produced program like that. In a moment, Dr. Jerry Corsi joins us as we talk about Iran and Barack Obama simply saying, hey, they're not that serious threat to us. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Dr. Jerome Corsi with us for the rest of the hour. He, of course, reached and received his Ph.D. from Harvard University in political science in 92. Very instrumental in work on World Net Daily. Accomplished author as well. Jerry, how are you?
I'm great, George. Great to be with you.
Likewise. Barack Obama simply saying Iran, Cuba, Venezuela aren't that serious a threat. Is it willful thinking? Is he naive, or is he right on top of things?
Well, he has a point in that, you know, the threat we face from these countries is not as severe as we faced from the Soviet Union at the height of the Cold War. But at the same time, I don't think we want to underestimate the threat that countries, especially like Iran, face for the region. I mean, Iran is, I'm convinced, developing nuclear weapons. I have been, you know, since I wrote Atomic Iran in 2005, and Iran is a terror-sponsoring state. It sponsors and funds Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas in the Gaza Strip. So I don't think we can underestimate the threat that Iran faces, you know, especially when Ahmadinejad gives speeches saying most recently that Israel is a stinking, dying corpse and it needs to be wiped from the face of the earth. I mean, these are very hostile statements, and it's a very dangerous country.
And he was quiet for a while. Now he seems to be picking up the rhetoric again.
Well, there's been some recent reports from the International Atomic Energy Agency confirming that Iran now has headed towards 6,000 centrifuges enriching uranium. And as I've been arguing for a couple of years, Iran is putting in these advanced P2 designs. I think Iran may have one of the most advanced centrifuges in the world.
Some of them may be better than our own power plants.
I wouldn't be surprised because, yeah. You know, George, as we discussed, Iran they buy equipment on the world market, then they re-engineer it, and they improve it. I mean, people think because Ahmadinejad says these crazy things that the Iranian scientists are not technically capable. That's a bad mistake.
True.
Iran is one of the most advanced cultures in the world. And the Iranian people are highly intelligent and highly skilled. And, you know, the Iranian technology should not be underestimated.
Many of whom have gone to schools here in the United States and in England.
Well, there's over over 1 million expatriate Iranians in the United States. When the Iranians come to the United States, they are always highly successful. They are great people. I've known many of them, worked with many of them, marched 200 miles in an Iranian freedom walk, as you remember, George, from Liberty Bell in Philadelphia to Washington, D.C.,
yep,
or freedom in Iran. The Iranian people are wonderful people. The tragedy is that these mullahs have captured the country, and this radical Islamic regime is threatening Israel and the region. And Barack Obama should not underestimate how difficult it's going to be to deal with Iran, regardless whether he's president or anyone else.
What if a newly elected president just went to Venezuela, for example? Let's just use that as an example.
Right.
Sat down with Hugo Chavez, went out and got a few drinks and said, come on, let's cut this stuff out. I mean, is that going to make any difference?
No, it sounds great. I mean, you know, we should all get together. You know, can't we talk about this? Let's all be friends. Then Lyndon Johnson said, you know, why can't we all come together and work this out? The problems are that on an international level, when you deal with heads of states meeting, it's an international stage where, you know, dictators, bad guys, have an opportunity to act out and to get agendas achieved that they wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to achieve. When the president of the United States, with the prestige of the United States, goes and visits Hugo Chavez, which truly is a relatively small country in terms of its power and size and economy, even though they've got oil and have, you know, the dignity of a nation, it still puts the United States' prestige into jeopardy if that meeting is not carefully orchestrated and we don't know in advance what we want to accomplish. I mean, I've attended, as a reporter, many, many international meetings, and when the heads of state finally get together, it's after a lot of work has been done by the staffs, maybe months, maybe years of work. So the final meeting with the heads of state is almost a formality. When you get the two heads of state together, and any two heads of state, or multiple heads of state, and they're going to just sit down and discuss things, quite frankly, you don't know what the outcome of that is going to be, and it may be favorable or not.
I got an email in today from a numerologist, and it's not Glynis McCants, everyone, but this person said that she's run numbers on everyone, and she thinks there's going to be some very serious things happening as we get close to the November election, so much so some of the stuff she put in this email, they were pretty darn frightening things, Jerry. You know, is this going to be a calm election, or can we expect something, in your opinion?
Well, George, I'm already concerned about a whole series of things. I mean, look at the price of oil, which is over $125 a barrel. This is a fundamental change economically. It's going to affect everything. It's a fundamental difference in how we're going to be able to live. It affects the price of food. It's going to, the airline industry is probably going to have to go through a major readjustment just with the price of jet fuel. And we're in that whole series of economic changes. Then in the Middle East, you've got a crisis going on right now in Israel with the Olmert government in Israel being under corruption charges. You could easily have a fall of the government or a new election being held if Netanyahu, the head of Likud, is the new prime minister and a new government in Israel. There could be a much more aggressive policy towards Iran. Iran is continuing to fund Lebanon and you know, Hezbollah in Lebanon. We've just seen Hezbollah again enact a whole series of domestic violence at aimed at taking over the Lebanese government.
Mm-hmm.
The Middle East is continues to be a powder keg that at any day could erupt, and with oil at this price, the oil-producing states, including the United Arab Emirates, are getting a huge amount of money into their sovereign wealth funds. I think the United Arab Emirates sovereign wealth fund is going to quickly be about $2.5 trillion.
Oh, my gosh.
And that fund is going to want to be investing in U.S. banks and various U.S. investments, which is going to, again, have some fundamental changes.
And cheap on the dollar.
Cheap on the dollar, because we've got major U.S. banks, which are still very fragile in terms of their asset positions, with the unfolding crisis in the real estate market and other credit markets like collateralized loan obligations, including commercial credits. There's a lot of that yet to unfold, and the sovereign wealth funds are positioned to come in and take major ownership positions in U.S. financial assets.
Jerry, we're going to keep you for some questions when we come right back, so we'll open up the phone lines in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Jerry Corsi with us. Jerry, this weekend I spoke before a number of people at an event here in Los Angeles, and I've got to tell you, you could tell by their looks, you can tell with some of the people that I talked with before the event occurred, that they're also concerned that there's something afoot, something big could happen. I now believe that Osama bin Laden is dead. I believe he died some time ago. I don't think these tapes that we're hearing are, fresh. By any means, I think they've been somewhat doctored. Both our government and the Zawahiri, the remaining al-Qaeda member there, the chief, they both need to keep his image alive, and that's why we're not being told. But everybody feels that something's happening, Jerry.
Well, that's very interesting perspective, George, because these recent bin Laden tapes, including the one that's out today, really say nothing new, and they have nothing that documents in any way that bin Laden is alive. I mean, it's a very interesting question, and there is a lot of reason to keep up the idea that bin Laden is alive and the threat is there. The idea that something's going to happen, I feel it too. I mean, I think you're right, George. The idea that we're going to get through the November election without some major blow-up in the Middle East, I think is not the way I'm going to count on it. I continue to read the intelligence reports from Israel that Iran is moving very fast to enrich uranium. And when Iran gets to the ability to have a weapons-grade uranium produced, I think that's when Israel says no more. And we face the possibility at that point of an Israeli strike like we just recently mm-hmm. saw in Syria.
And these bin Laden tapes are merely audio. He's not appearing on,
that's right.
on television. That's strange. And also, a lot of people didn't pick up on the fact that Bhutto, before she was assassinated, appeared with David Frost and basically said, and he never followed up with it,
right.
that bin Laden was killed.
Yes, there's a lot about Bhutto that was not investigated. I mean, I wrote a WorldNet Daily extensively and analyzed the tapes, which clearly showed her assassin, which was, a young man, well-dressed, clean-shaven, with a pistol that shot her, and he was never found. And that was clearly a cover-up and clearly an attempt to, Musharraf, to suppress that whole investigation. And Pakistan is still very rife with areas where the Taliban is thriving. We have not in any way turned the corner yet in the Middle East on radical Islamic groups like the Taliban, like al-Qaeda, which operates at a low level. And the one that concerns me the most and has for years, Iran, pursuing nuclear weapons and funding terrorists and Hezbollah and Hamas. And threatening Israel almost every time Ahmadinejad gets a chance to make a speech.
And the one thing McCain has said that is right on the button today is he said, right now Iran provides some of the deadliest explosive devices used in Iraq to kill
right.
our soldiers. I believe that.
I believe it too, and I've seen the evidence. I mean, the military has presented, our military has presented very excellent ballistics evidence that these improvised explosive devices, the IEDs, are being manufactured in Iran. Also, the training. We've seen this with any number of the militias, the al-Sadr's militia in Basra, which has been trained by the Revolutionary Guard in Iran. I mean, it's clear evidence that Iran is the culprit of a lot of the terrorism in Iraq. And
how could we permit this, though? How come we don't have an administration that would go to Iran and say, we know what you're doing, stop it immediately, or you're going to pay for it?
Well, George, I admire that Barack Obama is putting forward that we ought to talk to these countries. But the problem is, and if you take a look at, Ambassador Bolton, and I've read his book recently, and talking about all the back channels that we've tried to establish with Iran in the Bush administration, especially the second term, and let's go back to the Clinton administration. Madeleine Albright, the Secretary of State, even apologized to Iran over Mossadegh, the prime minister who was deposed with the CIA involved in 1953. And Clinton apologizing to Iran did not make great progress, you know, in trying to open up diplomatic initiatives. We finally have to come down to the point with Iran that everything's been tried. And the reality is that Iran is a radical regime, and they're going to pursue nuclear weapons. And Ahmadinejad means it when he says it, that Israel needs to be wiped off the map.
Now, for years, you've been talking about hopefully a peaceful resolution to the Iranian situation.
Yes.
You don't sound that way anymore.
Well, no, I continue to despair that we've missed all these opportunities, but I still think that the real force of change in Iran is the Iranian people. If we would just support the Iranian expatriates around the world, there's many brave Iranians in Los Angeles that are broadcasting every day into Iran. There are millions around the world that want to change the country. Let's start naming the dissidents by name who are in the prisons within Iran, who are fighting for freedom. We could have a change in Iran like you had in the Ukraine, a peaceful revolution that changed the country from within. That's the only path. War is always the problem in the Middle East. I continue to say it's not the solution. But when that path is not pursued, then, George, my mind kind of flips over and I start worrying that we're headed towards war because Israel can't stand to wait forever for positive change to occur in Iran.
All right, let's take some calls with you, Jerry. East of the Rockies, Tim, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hey, Tim.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
George, love your show, and from day one, I've been listening for almost 2 years, and I'm just so impressed with what a profound gentleman you are and so magnanimous. I love the way you treat your callers.
Well, thank you.
Look, I have a distressing theory that I feel I need to share. I've shared it with some confidants, but I think it's time to go public. We're talking about the feeling of coming unpleasantries in the future. We can't really put our finger on it, but let me make you aware, if you're not already, about an executive order that George W. Bush signed in May of 2007, just a year ago. It gives the sitting president, whoever it be, the authority to decide what constitutes a national crisis. Now, that could be a hurricane, it could be civil unrest, any number of things. Once the president has declared a national emergency, for whatever reason, he has the power at that point to technically become an absolute dictator and tell everybody in Congress to go on ahead home. Now, even if we don't have a natural catastrophe like extensive cyclones and hurricanes and tornadoes and that sort of thing, I have a sneaky suspicion that Barack Obama has been putting his foot in his mouth so many times, and he's developing so many negatives that when it gets time for the convention, I think Hillary and Bill, who are highly motivated for her to become the Empress of North America, that she will be able to sway the superdelegates to give the votes to her.
So you may be right on the button on that one. And Jerry, I have tried to think, why is Hillary still hanging in there?
Well,
I think he's right.
Well, you know, George, those directives, it's National Security Presidential Directive 51 and Homeland Security Presidential Directive 20. I wrote about them in WorldNet Daily when they were issued, and they do give the exact powers the caller is talking about. The president can declare an emergency and basically assume the powers of a dictator, take over all levels of government, federal, state, local, down to the tribal level, and without necessarily even consulting Congress. I've been very concerned about these directives. It's a very interesting question why Hillary's staying in the race and whether a crisis could cause some fundamental changes, either the superdelegates going to Hillary or even a cancellation of the election, which I continue to get emails about all the time. I'm just saying that, you know, in the way it's playing out right now, we're in a situation I don't think I've ever felt in my life, that we are, there's so many threats on the horizon and different potentials of the way this could play out. That's very hard to calculate. And Hillary's either got to be staying in because she thinks she's got a legitimate chance, or she plans that Obama will lose this time and she'll run again in 4 years. But, you know, the circumstances that could play out for an international crisis are right there in front of us. And I keep thinking Iran is at the center of that. And I'm very, very concerned that the President Bush, either for himself or whomever follows him, has put into place presidential powers that are contrary to our freedoms and could be used to establish martial law and basically have a presidential takeover of the government.
West of the Rockies, your turn. Sean, driving around where?
I'm currently in the Columbia River Gorge in Oregon.
Okay, go ahead, Sean.
Well, I'm a little confused now by Jerry's response to the last caller. There seems to be a lot of political rhetoric flying around tonight, which is a little disappointing for me. That's one reason I like to listen to Coast, because I get that everywhere else. But in a little bit of defense of Barack Obama, I don't understand why he's wrong to say that the Soviet Union is a bigger threat. The fact is, they had thousands of nuclear warheads pointed right at us.
Exactly.
And for Iran to maybe be on the verge of being, of developing nuclear power, I think he's right. It's not as big a threat. And as far as talking about Iran, that seems like a little bit of political rhetoric to me too, because it's always seemed to me like the real problem is Saudi Arabia. The people who are really backing terrorism and are the actual terrorists always seem to be Saudis.
And it's obvious, Sean, that this administration is not going to get tough with Saudi Arabia. President Bush was there last week, and nothing of material happened, Jerry.
That's right. I mean, again, we didn't even get a concession for more oil production until President Bush left, and there's some discussion of it currently, but not significantly increase in oil production from Saudi Arabia that would make a difference in price. I keep going back to Iran, not because it's really anywhere near the magnitude of the threat that the Soviet Union was at the height of the Cold War. Obama's right on that. But yet, when you look at which countries could cause a regional war of major significance, Iran is at the top of the list. So they have to be considered a real significant threat today, and one that's very difficult to handle. And I think it's not political rhetoric to point out that all the presidents, that we've tried all kinds of strategies. Clinton tried negotiations and really apologizing to Iran, and it didn't work. Bush was belligerent more in the first term. In the second term, he has done more of what the Democrats argued he should do, which is work through the European Union 3 of France, Germany, and the United Kingdom, and the International Atomic Energy Agency, and that hasn't worked. I'm not sure anything works with Iran except change from within. And that's the one strategy that none of the presidents have really focused on and tried.
All right, next up, let's go to our international line. Carlos in Toronto. Hey, Carlos, how are you?
Good evening, Joe and Jerry. First of all, I want to say that I appreciate very much the program, especially because of all the dissident voices, and especially because you kind of touch every single subject that is important for us in the world. I happen to be a Venezuelan living in Canada for some while because I'm studying here, and I listen to the fact that you consider Venezuela a threat, and I And I have been studying history, especially. And I realized that the United States is having a history with Latin America based on successive invasions and all kind of impositions that, in a certain way, I understand have this actual repercussion. That's why a lot of governments now, when they are elected, they go on a left side, because what they try to do is why the other governments supported by the United States, they never allow, which means increase the condition of the poor people in the countries. And I wonder if you know that all that measures are taken, even though you dislike Hugo Chavez, and even you dislike whoever is against that elite that sometimes in the United States you even condemn, because you know about Wildenberg Group, you know about the transnational who try to predominantly establish monopolies in oil and all kind of things. And there is a kind of contradiction in your speech, because I listen coast to coast, and sometimes you know that is happening, mm-hmm. and in the other hand, you are agree with the fact that you consider all these countries a threat. For instance, I wonder why Cuba is a threat, just because there are...
No. The mere fact that we're talking about this, Carlos, doesn't mean we believe that. We're talking about Barack Obama's statements tonight.
Yeah, but Barack Obama is been attacking because he tries to portray a person who could be capable to dialogue, and I agree with him. He has to dialogue with people that supposedly are enemies of the United States, but you know, to understand why they are enemies of the United States, because they are their enemy, in fact, ideologically, but they don't have the power militarily to attack the United States. But perhaps economically, Venezuela has some kind of leverage because they
sure.
have oil and stuff. But Cuba, for instance, they decide to have a different government, and all of a sudden they take measures. They have a free health system, because I happens to be somebody who visited Cuba once, and I was really kind of surprised, because I was expecting the army in the street. Everybody was kind of repressed and stuff. And it's true, there are some kind of limitations, but it's not as in the United States they try to feed the fear into the people. And I'm talking to you because I know that you are people that we could exchange, we could dialogue. And for instance, the fact that you cannot travel to Cuba is also a way that you cannot demystify whatever the media's bias they portray about.
Well, and also, Carlos, and let me tell you, and I think, Jerry, one of the strange things about all of this is, you know, Cuba, of course, we haven't had any relations with so much because it's so hot politically, yet we continue to have dealings with China, and they can roll over their own people in tanks. It doesn't make any sense.
And, you know, we have reached out to China and established diplomatic relations, which go back to Richard Nixon going to China. And Obama has a point on the need to establish relations with these different countries. Where Obama kind of crosses over the line is he suggests that he made the mistake of saying in the YouTube debate that we should have, you know, he would meet as head of state with countries unconditionally, you know, as head of state, and that is really unrealistic and is never going to happen. The idea that we should engage aggressively with all countries in dialogue at various levels, I think, is something that every administration has wanted to pursue, some more successfully than others. I mean, certainly the Clinton administration was very aggressive in wanting to pursue relations with all kinds
of countries. Well, see, and I think the mistake Obama made is she should have said, look, I want to create a dialogue with
yes.
these countries. Look, they're doing some things that have got to stop, rather than to come across and seem naive that he doesn't understand that Iran, for example, continues to fund
exactly.
the war in Iraq. And the other thing that I think, we only got 30 seconds left, Jerry, and mark my words, one of the biggest problems coming up right now, the cartels are killing off policemen, and policemen are leaving the Mexican ranks by the hundreds.
It's very scary.
It's a huge
frightful.
Problem. It's going to affect yeah. us, and nobody's doing anything about it except you.
I agree. These recent police officials in Mexico that have asked for asylum to come to the United States because they're in fear of their lives is a very frightening development. And it shows that Mexico is moving towards a increasingly drug cartel-controlled, lawless country. We've got to take that very seriously. It's right on our border.
Jerry, thank you so much again, my friend. Jerry Corsi also writes for WorldNet Daily. I'll be back in a moment with Ann Albers as we talk about angels on Coast to Coast AM.